And this is the Age Group Multisport Podcast with me, Richard Conway. This is a platform for age group multisport athletes to showcase their journeys. To another episode of the Age Group Multisport Podcast, and we are on episode 86. And this episode was recorded a few weeks back, and it really was supposed to go out and become episode 85. And lastminute.com, as was explained on the previous podcast, the guest then, Crystal Hollick, decided that she wasn't sure whether she wanted to let it go out in the world. So we held back, and I sent her a copy across to the States, because that's where she's from. And she had a listen to it. And the editing must have been quite good, because she said, yep, yeah, okay, let's run with it. So here it is. A bit later than planned, but, you know, if somebody's not happy with something and they're a little bit tentative, and to be fair to Crystal, when we made the Zoom call and started recording, she was a bit taken aback, because she didn't know we were actually going to do the interview there and then. She thought it was just, I don't know why, but she thought it was just a pre-chat. But we rolled with it anyway, and on top of that, she was having an interview later on in the day, so I guess she was thinking about other things and not ready, so not probably in the place that she thought she would be at her best. But to be honest, I had to disagree, because I thought the interview and she came across really, really well, and I really enjoyed chatting to her. So this is the background to Crystal. She is from the US of A, and she's from Connecticut. She is a mum. We discuss about her being diagnosed with autoimmune disease. We discuss how she got into multisport in the first place. We also talk about her favourite distance, because she's done pretty much all of them. And then what she thought about when she took part in the World Championships this year in Abu Dhabi. And she also gives us hints and tips. We have a chat about a week of training at the moment, and a favourite bit of kit. So lots to unpack there, and I hope you enjoy it. And that's all coming up. Notice that the British Triathlon had cancelled the awards, and I guess it was due to lack of uptake, as they said. And I wonder if that's down to the cost. People haven't really got a lot of spare cash these days to spend on going to an award ceremony. So, yeah, it was a bit of a shame to hear that, especially for the guys and girls who would have been nominated. So, yeah, bit disappointing. Maybe next year. I said last time on the podcast I was reading a new book about ultra-processed people by Chris Van Tulken. I'm about three quarters of the way through it now, and to be honest, we're all doomed. They've got us where they want us, basically. Ultra-processed food, we can't escape it. Or can we? Interesting bits in there. Company like Nestle, who they've got a bigger economy than a lot of small countries, and they can reach areas that, you know, most companies wouldn't be able to reach, in the deepest, darkest forests of Brazil. On one of the rivers, they actually did a supermarket boat so they could sell all their food products. Unbelievable. But yeah, it's a good read. I disagree with some of the thoughts that he says, that saying that we You know, we can't get away from ultra-processed food. I think we can, but it'll take takes a lot of willpower, and you've got to really read the labels and try and not get processed food in the first place. I think that's the key. But again, it's all about your budget and, you know, economics and availability and all that. And he dives into, like I said, the economics and the science and the history and the production of the UPF. And it's quite a grim read, to be honest. Not finished it yet, so I shall put the outcome on the next episode. A couple of podcasts I've been listening to. And the first one is the Oxygen Addict podcast with Rob Wilby. And he discusses winter training. And it's mainly for middle and long distance athletes, because those are the guys and girls that he trains. But one interesting bit of advice on there was he suggests to all his athletes that he trains that they have HRV app on their phones and take their reading every morning. And it's one thing that I actually do, and I have done for quite a few years now. The app costs £10, and this isn't a plug. I have no affiliation with them whatsoever, but I do find that it basically helps me work out what I'm going to be doing over the next couple of days, how I'm feeling. So yeah, look into that. It's well worth the podcast, well worth a listen, but the app's well worth an investment. And the second podcast I'd like to recommend is episode 28 of Run Form. And this is the podcast that is hosted by running coach Bobby McGee and Matt Pendola. And on this episode, they feature Dave Schmitz, and he's the guru behind resistance band training, or RBT. And they talk about the benefits of RBT, and they talk about different quality of bands and maybe why RBT is better than actually doing some weight training, in their opinion, for improving your athletic performance. But yeah, a bit of food for thought. Not something I usually use myself, like I said, but yeah, we'll look into it, and I'll start following Dave and see what he does on YouTube. So if you fancy it, give it a listen. And I was a bit remiss on the last podcast because I said, what are we going to watch over the coming months now that all the cycling's finished and triathlon's pretty much finished? We've got cyclocross, of course. Cyclocross has just started. Well, it's been going a few weeks in the States, and now they're back over into Europe. And that's usually on a Friday or a Saturday and a Sunday. And there's some really great races and some, you know, I think I said this last time, I was banging on about cyclocross. The ladies' event is probably more entertaining than the men's events, to be honest. But yeah, so we've got cyclocross to look forward to. So yeah, what was I thinking? On a personal note, Achilles is progressing nicely. So well, in fact, that I took part in my first and probably my last cross country of the season on Sunday. It was an absolutely cracking day. Sun was out. It was such a nice time to do it at, I thought. Anyway, we weren't racing till 1:30. How civilised on a Sunday morning, or Sunday afternoon as it goes. One of our local athletics clubs were putting on their cross country of the year, and it was held in a woodland not too far away from us. So we decided there was a few of us going to go over and just take part and support it. £7. So you've got to support it for £7. How many events can you do that's only £7? Not very many. But yeah, really well marshalled and really well put on by Cleethorpes Athletics Club. Really enjoyed it. And my first aim was to finish. And I did that. And I did all right. I did got top 10, which I was quite pleased with in my age group. And yeah, managed to get round no problem. And had quite a good time and quite a good run. Started off quite slowly, and then just as the laps went on, just picked off a few people and yeah, ended up 9th. So quite happy with the performance. Long may it continue, and hope the injury keeps on getting better and better. And finally, a little bit of disappointment. The ETU was supposed to be telling us where the European Championships were going to be held on Friday. And unfortunately, quite a number of the races were missing. And they basically just said that they'll be announced as soon as possible as they're in negotiation with potential candidates. And hope that they can inform us without further delay. So it doesn't really help us trying to plan a season for next year, to be honest. And on the various Facebook pages that I'm involved in, people have already said, oh, well, they're not really going to bother about the Europeans and just crack on and sort the season out and go for the Worlds and qualification for 25. So, yeah. I guess it's just a matter of watch this space and hope that they can find some venues for us to race at. Right, it's now time for the main event and we'll see you on the other side.
Is it good afternoon?
Good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm very well, how are you?
Wow, welcome back from holiday. How was it?
It was fabulous, thank you very much. Yeah.
Where did you go?
We went sailing round the coast and islands of Greece.
Oh my goodness, that sounds lovely. Wow.
It was as good as it sounds.
Yeah, I bet. Oh my gosh. I wanted to get to that. At least Greece. I've never been to like Italy, Greece area. It just, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you based out of England?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What about you? Where are you based?
I'm located in Connecticut in the state. Yeah. Been born and raised here. And I only get to visit, you know, across the pond. So it's, yeah.
Have you been to England?
I have been to England. I've been to Ireland, but mostly for work. At that time, it was working, collaborating with like life sciences companies, so the pharmaceutical companies. Mm-hmm. So they were short trips. They were or going to conferences, for example. Short trips, always work related. Not a lot of personal time, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So probably the last trip I took was just to Abu Dhabi. That was personal, and yes. Like probably would have never have gone to that part of the world at this time in my life if I didn't have, you know, a compelling reason to do so. And it was amazing. It actually opened my eyes up to just travel in general. Haven't been able to do a lot of it. So
yeah, cool.
That was definitely a little bit of a turning point for me. So
We'll get into that because obviously, that was through triathlon. If you'd just like to introduce yourself, that would be great.
Sure. So my name is Crystal. I am living in Connecticut in the United States. I am a professional career person in healthcare right now, very deep into that. And in my spare time, I love all things about multisport. I am a blessed mother of two adopted children as well. So between my career and my training and competing, as well as being a mom, I stay very, very busy.
Yeah, yeah. And what did you do growing up as a kid, sporting wise?
Funny enough, I grew up as a dancer, athletic. Yeah, it was not part of my childhood, really. I actually had exercise-induced asthma, so I stayed away from it for the most part. My mother co-owned a dance studio, so I grew up doing the classic ballet, tap, and jazz, and had some experience in doing tennis when I went to high school and dabbled in some field hockey as well. But once I hit college, it was more recreational at that point, you know, maybe would work out. I reflect back on those times and I think my workout was probably just, you know, kind of moving the elliptical for a half an hour, you know, and feeling good and jumping on, you know, going to do my homework or go hang out with friends. So very laid back in terms of, you know, that aspect. So not a lot of quote unquote athletics growing up at all, other than but I do consider dancing athletic, but just in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely is. Yeah, and very, you need great coordination as well, which I bet stood you in good stead for multi-sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Flexibility is, you know, really key. And just that, I would say functional fitness too was probably more of my focus early on.
Yeah, definitely give you a good base, even though you say it's not athletic. I guess it's quite athletic in a different form. So yeah, great. So what was your favorite type of dancing?
Oh, tap. Hands down, tap. Love tap dancing, like Samuel Glover and Sammy Davis Jr. I love tap. If I could find an adult tap class around here, I live a little bit in the country, so it's a little hard to find. But I do really enjoy it. And actually at my wedding, I tap danced with my mother. It was like one of the highlights of my time.
So. That's cool. Well, maybe down the line, you might want to start your own tap school when everything's quieting down a bit, eh? Cool. So moving on from college, and you got into work, obviously, how did multi-sport and triathlon come about?
So certainly by happenstance, I had an injury. I actually was really into strength training and had experienced a lot of discomfort in my back and, you know, down the right side of my body. So the recommendation was made to jump in the pool, you know, stop lifting and jump in the pool and, you know, loosen up, get it all out. I didn't know really how to swim other than doing like the froggy paddle, you know, in the pool. It was very foreign to me. So I went to the pool without goggles, without anything, just started, you know, swimming. And then I started watching some videos and so I started swimming, really. The other big, I would say, event that happened in my life was that I was diagnosed with what was considered a chronic autoimmune disease. And so I am a scientist and a researcher. And so that led me to just look into, well, why is this happening? And through that process, I learned that stress is actually a big factor in driving autoimmune disease. So I paused and reflected on life and thought, okay, what are some of the things I can change? And so I decided to look at what I was doing in terms of my physical activity and started to do a little bit of, at that time, jogging. So I would jog, you know, for a minute and walk for 4 minutes and, you know, and just start to build up a little bit of my cardio. And then at one point the idea was brought to me and say, well, you know, you kind of ride your bike for recreation. You're starting to run, you know, and with that period of my life where I was in the pool, why don't you put them together? Why don't you do a triathlon? Never had thought about it, to be honest. But it did, you know, once an idea kind of gets in your mind, you started thinking and thinking and thinking about it. So in 2017, that was my first sprint triathlon here locally, within Connecticut. And, it was a wonderful experience. It was by the water. It was flat. it's a very, like try friendly, like first event, you know, first timer event friendly, event. And I did it and I finished it. And I said to myself, that was fun. That was the only triathlon I did that season. And, so I figured, hey, next season, why don't I try to do a longer distance? And, that's really how it kickstarted.
Yeah. So did you know anybody who'd been doing triathlon prior to that?
I did. I had a friend who had done a couple of Ironmans and such, but at that point was not very active in the sport. So it was a little bit of a lone wolf from my perspective in terms of getting into it. I had some guidance in terms of, okay, let's go out and ride, you know, but was and have been primarily pretty independent in terms of figuring out my training as well as my nutrition. along this journey.
Yeah. And your first sprint triathlon, was that pool-based or was it open water?
It was actually open water and it was in the ocean,
right.
Like in Long Island Sound, because I live near New York. So the salt water, the tide, it all came into play for that event. So that was new to me. At the same time, we do have a beautiful lake close by, and there's an open water swim club that I was able to participate in to get me a bit more acclimated with the open water swimming. So that has been a fantastic part of my training, and a great community of swimmers there too.
Yeah. Well, even so, going from the pool to a lake, open water, and then actually doing your first one in the ocean, it's pretty drastic and pretty different, isn't it?
It is, very much so. And I am not I don't love the water. So that was very challenging for me. And I remember the one moment I had training when I didn't go in with my wetsuit. That was a big deal for me. And I remember, you know, texting my friend and being like, I did it. We went in the water without my wetsuit. And I thought, whoo, that was crazy.
Yeah.
For someone, you know, it's pretty normal. But for me, that was a big.
Yeah. I think it's all these little steps, isn't it, as we go through the journey of like achievements, you know, learning to swim, then doing front crawl, you know, and then going from the pool base to open water and getting your first wetsuit and putting it on and trying it. And, you know, it's all these, we forget, as we've been in the sport for such a long time, we forget about these little steps that have become part of who we are, actually. And they're all quite character building in their own way.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So what was next then after you'd done your first triathlon? You obviously got the bug.
I did. So we have some local events around here, and I had signed up next for the Olympic distance and had completed that. And I then, that it was that season that I also then decided to up my game again and do a 70.3 distance as well. And by the end of that season, I had received notification that I had qualified for USAT's national championships, the age group championships. And at first I kind of, I don't know, passed that email. I was like, oh, that's fun. You know, I wasn't in the community. I didn't have a lot of I didn't have a lot of knowledge around, you know, what that event was. And I thought at the time that was the event in 2018 that was going to, it was in Ohio. And I was like, oh, I'm going to travel to Ohio to do like, you know, an hour or two race kind of thing. I was like, that seems like a lot of, you know. And at the time, I had shared it with my then husband, and I was like, well, it's like, you got to go. I was like, I do. I was like, you guys want to go? You know, I've got a family, we've got children, you know, we're all going to pick up and go to Ohio. Like, that's not part of the vacation plans. And we went. And I was very grateful that everybody, you know, got in the car and took the road trip out to Ohio to support me in this race. And I remember looking at transition when it was all full, and I had already done an Ironman branded race. And at the time, and looking at that transition and it being so, there was a lot of people, obviously it was thousands of people, not what I'm used to, you know, at a local race. And even at the Ironman branded race, it was a little bit smaller. And just the patriotism of it being, you know, the United States, because it was put on by USAT, it just created a different energy for me. I got really nervous. I usually am able to very much kind of stay grounded in, you know, when starting a race, but I got incredibly nervous. I felt very proud to be there. And then the energy switched and I got super excited. That race was interesting. It was like one of my worst swims, but it was one of my best bikes. The run was, you know, in the middle. It was just an amazing experience. That's probably really when I got the bug to say, I'm going to do this. Like, this is fun. I really, really enjoy this sport.
And what distance was that at?
That one was an Olympic.
Olympic, yeah.
Yeah.
And was that just a national United States event?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. It was the age group national championships that USAT puts on. It's now called the USAT National Championships, but it's the age group level competition.
And how does that work then for qualification for that?
That will qualify you. So during that race, they have the Olympic distance and the sprint distance, and that would qualify you for Team USA for the Worlds. And depending on, you know, what year it is and where it's located. So those are world qualifiers. Mm. That race is a world qualifier for those distances.
And is it only one race per year, or is there several races?
In terms of
qualification for representing abroad?
Oh, qualification? No, there's multiple opportunities through USAT to qualify for worlds. At different distances, but also different, you know, modalities. So you've got aqua bike, aquathon, duathlon, right? Long distance, you know, the gamut. Yeah. So USAT puts on a multi-sport national championships every year too. So then you're getting at more of that multi-sport aspect of things where you can do different things. And that's actually what I started to do this year, just to kind of change it up a little bit. Instead of just always doing, you know, the sprint or the Olympic distance, I started to change it up. But
yeah. So was that the first time that you'd heard of like age group?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's how you got into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So how did you qualify then for representing the US?
So that came a couple of years ago when I did the national championships in Milwaukee.
Okay.
Yeah, I had a really great race and was able to qualify. Actually, it was a roll down.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They all count.
Well, it was funny because, you know, that here at USAT, they take the top 18 from your age group. I was 19th and I thought to myself, 19th. Oh,
worst place to be.
Right. I was like, 19, really? Oh. No, so there's a little disappointment there, but I was so proud. It was the first time I had ever kind of cracked the top 20 at the time. So I was proud, but I have to admit there was a little bit of, you know, disappointment that I hadn't been in that top 18. And then that was in August, and in February I was on vacation and I had received the email that I had made the team, and it was surreal. I didn't believe it. You know, I had to have my friend look. I was like, what is this? Like, you know, so it was certainly a very exciting moment for me, given everything that I had kind of gone through in the year preceding.
Yeah. So just going back, because we sort of like skated over your autoimmune disease, what was the effects on you? Because there's lots of different things, isn't it, that it could be. So how did it affect you?
Yeah, and I'm happy to share. It was actually a diagnosis of Graves' disease, which is hyperthyroidism. So the symptoms of that are, you're very, very active. Your thyroid is overactive. So you're in this constant, you know, state of high energy. And so I was tired all the time and I lost an incredible amount of weight. I became less than 100 pounds, and no matter what I ate, it was great for weight loss, but it was a little bit obviously too much weight loss and just being tired all the time. So it was very hard, I would say, to really focus on work. And so I met with an endocrinologist and I initially engaged in a regimen of taking the medication, you know, to get my thyroid back in balance. And as soon as I got that imbalance, that's when I paused and said, what are the lifestyle changes I can make? So being an epidemiologist, we're all about, you know, what are the what are the factors, you know, that are associated with dis-ease? So getting back to that lifestyle, like I am a believer that a lifestyle change can have an impact on your health. So I started making changes to my diet and changes to my fitness. And again, that's when I really started working out and really looking at what I was putting into my body. Yeah. And that led to a diagnosis of remission, which I'm not sure is really common given that it's considered a chronic disease. But I went off the medication. I retained my thyroid because what was recommended that I go for surgery. And I went into remission. And to this day, I don't have that same issue. So it feels really good to have made that change and to have changed, you know, not only physically, but mentally, but to feel healthier in those changes. You talked about it before, you know, it's interesting to reflect back on the changes you've made. And that was a real, definitely turning point for me in terms of how I was living.
So in respect to your diet, so what did you change? What did you start eating that you weren't eating before?
Yeah, certainly being more mindful. Funny enough, I have a doctorate in nutrition. so that was helpful in the process to understand, you know, that my philosophy changed a little bit from processed food to whole food. And I just want to put out there too, that this is my journey, you know, and everyone, you know, others' journeys are going to be different, but my journey was just being more mindful of, you know, if I can state the ingredients, then that feels good to me, you know, and I'm not going to say I eat things that are what might be considered unhealthy, you know, it's a balance. But I did move towards, you know, more lean meats and vegetables and trying more variety in the vegetables I eat. I mean, I grew up like corn and peas and green beans. There was no kale. There was no collard greens. There were, you know, or very little of them. So it was that experimentation. I love to cook. So I just would buy some cookbooks and just try some new recipes and then started to get really interested because of my background in nutrition around how to apply nutrition in endurance sports too. So I got some of those books and started, it was fun for me. And so those were some of the changes that I had made, you know, moving from maybe just a really heavy carbohydrate, you know, type diet to one that's more moderate. I don't believe in excluding anything in one's diet, but more so moderation and really what feels good, you know, and move in that direction, you know, on a daily basis.
Well, that's good because it seems to be working for you, and long may it continue. Because we're all individual, aren't we? And nothing works the same for everybody. I think, again, that's another thing that the medical practices are really finding out. They can't sort of like paint everybody with the same brush because we are individual people.
Right. And what's also important is it's a journey. What worked for me a couple of years ago, I can tell it doesn't work for me right now. There was a time in my life where I meal planned every day and I weighed my food and I counted my macros, right? And I've done keto, I've done Mediterranean, I've tried different things. I've done the intermittent fast, you know, I've tried because I actually do like experimenting. You know, how does this make me feel? Is this working? And at different times in my life, different things, you know, do resonate for me. And I think that's one of the things when people ask me, I said, it's a journey, you know, and today looks very different than what it was, you know, a couple of years ago. And it'll continue to evolve. as well. So right now I'm like ravenous all the time. I'm like, how do I stop eating? You know? So I'm like actually eating more carbs. I'm like, well, you know, and trying to pair that with some more protein and fat, you know, just it's a constant, it is constantly trying to kind of figure it out. And it, to me, I kind of approach it as something fun, you know, not as something stressful. So.
Yeah. Cause it can be stressful. Yes. A lot of people do look at food to be stressful. Especially if it's just a source of energy rather than, you know, actually doing the body some good. So yeah, a lot of people get stressed about it. Hence there's so many problems, isn't there, with food. Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm delighted that you're on the mend and it's gone in remission and it's working and long may it continue. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just going back to, we've digressed a little bit. I told you it would bounce around all over the place. Going back to
get to the good one. Get to the good race. The Ironman, right? The full. Yeah. So I did do an Ironman. I just have a real affection for the Lake Placid, New York area, and I know the course. It's a challenging course. And so it was a time in my life where I was going through a divorce and had some time on my hands to train for 8 hours, 10 hours a day. And it was a really amazing time for me because it really allowed me to heal and through training and to do an event really solo. I had, again, very little support during that time, apart from some really great friends, you know, which I do want to, you know, put out there that they were, you know, just amazing in terms of that time period in my life, in terms of supporting me. But it was the training that I did that really got me through that really tough time. And going and doing the Ironman branded race in Lake Placid was, again, surreal. It was amazing. It was beautiful. It really, for me, was kind of like that I had hit kind of that goal, right? Started at sprint distance, Olympics, 70.3, and, you know, had finally hit that Ironman distance. And I really felt like that was a great place, you know, it brought me to a really great place because I never felt like I could do that by myself. And I did. And for me, that was really important to me to accomplish that on my own at that point in my life. So,
yeah, I think it's amazing that what sport can bring, not just from a physical point of view, like we've already said, but from a mental point of view and how it does bring you through if you keep at it through the dark times in your life. You know, it just gives you that extra outlet, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, and you're obviously living proof of that. So, yeah, well done. I mean, well done for doing an Ironman. Can I just ask, what's your favorite distance?
My favorite distance might be the 70.3. I haven't done them. And, you know, this was the first season I got back into them. I kind of scaled back a little bit, right? A little bit of rest and repair, active rest, right? But I just did a 70.3. I did the Tough Man event here in New York. And I really enjoy that kind of long distance, middle distance. You know, I don't feel like I need to do another Ironman distance again. I feel like I've checked that box. It's very time intensive, you know, and I really want to support my son who's getting into the sport. I just don't feel like I have that time. But to me, that 70.3 is a great distance. I still like the Olympic, but I would say somewhere, you know, between those two. But right now I'm really, really attracted to that 70.3. It's a bit of that endurance, you know, zone two, zone three kind of stuff that I really enjoy. I find it very meditative to be on a bike.
Yes. So, there's not the mad rush, is there, of the sprint,
right?
You know, you take that out of it and it's a bit more calmer, I guess.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's really, really cool. So going back to your qualification, one question I've got for you. How competitive is your age group for getting the qualification places?
It's definitely competitive. Yeah, absolutely. And it depends what race. So certainly the sprint and Olympic distances, I find that this age group that I'm in now, like my mid 40s. but I think in general, what I see as a trend is that these are very competitive, male, female, you know, this age group in the 50s, you know, this is the most competitive time, I believe. What's great about the sport is that you can start as young as, you know, high school age, and you can go in 80, 90, you know, you think about other sports, how many other sports can you kind of do for a lifetime? So
And it's inspiring for us who are around the 40s and 50s, seeing these guys at 80 still doing it, because we've got a long way to go, you know, and they're just so inspiring. I've had a few older people on in their 80s, and they're just still going, still fantastic. So, you're right, 100%. Yeah, so you got your qualification email through.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, how did it develop from there? What was the next stage?
At that point, I had decided to bring in some support to just help me plan. I am very much a proponent of 80-20 training, so I'll put that out there. And that's the plan I had always followed. And at some point I thought, you know, let me see what I could be doing differently. Let me get a different perspective. As I mentioned, I had pretty much coached myself and, you know, had done my own nutrition. And so wanted to get a little bit more support from a coach. So I had engaged with a coach, and it was primarily, though, just for training plans. I didn't have a lot of one-on-one interaction. It was kind of like the minimal, and it was helpful. But at the same time, I also felt that I know myself best. That's kind of what it taught me in some regard. So it was, you know, getting prepared for that event and trying to look at things differently. To be honest, I wanted to go. I wanted to experience it. I wanted to experience the culture, you know, of being somewhere else in the world, and the camaraderie of being with other athletes from all across the world. And I just wanted to finish. To be really, really honest, I was so excited. And just to be a part of it, to represent this country, to represent my father's name, who has been passed for many years. To me, that's what it was about. And it was about, you know, crossing the line.
Yeah,
I did try hard, but also I wanted to make sure I had enough just to make sure I crossed the line. So
fantastic. Yeah, because when you get that try suit, you know, with you from your national country and you've got your name on it, it's like that's, and then when you put it on and race, for me, you've done all the hard work. That moment, if you're middle of the pack like I am, then it's about actually just racing and enjoying it and soaking up the atmosphere and the moment. You know, that's, so like I say, you've done the work to get there. And it's just, it's special, isn't it?
It's very special. Incredibly special. That's a great way to describe it.
And how did the race go?
It went great. It was very hot. It was located in Abu Dhabi. It was an Olympic triathlon. So it was interesting swimming around jellyfish. That was my first time, but truly amazing. And the distance from the swim to the bike transition was quite long. So we were running about a quarter, if not a half a mile, at least from that. The bike was, you know, beautiful. I actually was on a rented bike, so which felt much heavier. Different, but incredible. And then, you know, the run, hot conditions, as you would expect, you know, over 90 degrees Fahrenheit. But wonderful just environment, as I mentioned, and I would have, and I just want to say that the support we received from the leadership at USAT between Tim Yu and Hans Ernst, and seeing them on the course rooting you on no matter if you were in first place or last place, was truly, you know, was really just amazing. It was, it felt very well supported in every aspect of that, of that trip.
Yeah. I mean, these are memories that you're making that you'll never forget.
Never, never, yeah. Never.
Yeah. And you want to repeat again and again.
Yeah, I'd like to.
Well, that's cool. So what was next then after Abu Dhabi? What have you done since?
So since then, I did go to this past season. I did try the multi-sport national championships that USAT puts on for the first time. I wanted to diversify a little bit, as I had mm-hmm. mentioned earlier, and feel like I'm a really strong cyclist and then can go either way with the, you know, the swim and the run. But I really wanted to try aquabike. So that was an opportunity to do so. And then also tried draft legal sprint as well at multinationals. And that's what the great thing about that event is that you do get to just experience these different events. And that environment is just, it's a little bit more relaxed, but it's still fun. It's still competitive, but it's just a different vibe. So that was a great opportunity to try some of those different events. As a result of my participation in that, I did qualify for another world championship. So I'll be going to Malaga, Spain in 2024 for both the draft legal. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah.
Triathlon and the Aquabike Olympic as well. So that's very exciting. The rest of the season was, you know, doing some more local races, going to the national championships in Milwaukee in August. And right now I'm training to go to Daytona, Florida for Clash Endurance, which is the long distance national championships. So that'll be my last event for the year, but I'm hoping to qualify potentially for Townsville, Australia, which is hosting the long distance championships or the world championships in 2024.
Yeah, good. Well, that sounds like it's all working out and going according to plan. Yeah. How did you find the draft legal racing?
So fun, so crazy, but so fun. I loved the actual, you know, there was a lot of talking, right? And like, it was much, much different. Funny enough, I had traveled with my road bike, and my road bike has aero bars on it that are wired into my handlebars. And I forgot that you can't use that bike in a draft legal. So I looked to my boyfriend and I said, can I borrow your bike? Now, mind you, my boyfriend is 6'2". I'm 5'5". So the best that we could do was get the seat as low as possible. And he said, have fun. And I was incredibly nervous, you know, and I was like, okay, I've got a bike I've never rode that does not fit me. And I'm going to now try to draft. So it was a great experience. And that's what, you know, just had to make the best of it. You know, can't get upset, can't get, you know, you just can't get upset. And I did, I had a great time. It was great. Cool. I'm looking forward to some more, maybe some criterium races next year to kind of prepare for, you know, the world event. So,
Great. Fabulous. Well, that's a great story. One thing that I did know on your email, you have a mantra.
Yeah.
Do you want to share what your mantra is?
Well, it is, I can, I will, watch me. That is from Carrie Green. And then I think it resonates with me because I think of I can as staying inspired and having faith. And then the I will is just having that resilience to, you know, keep moving forward And the whole watch me piece is, you know, just as you do it, just stay humble to that as well. So it's a very, it is a mantra that I keep very close to me, because as growing up, you know, I was never told that I couldn't do something, but at the same time, I was never told I can do something. And I think from my perspective, it's something that has been very kind of innate in me. And I consistently look for opportunities to grow, you know, whether it be competing in the sport or in my professional career. I am just a lifelong learner. So I think, you know, change is inevitable and that growth piece is optional. And so for me, it's saying to myself, I can, and I will. And so just sit and watch, you know, and I hope through that message, it's one to inspire others that they can, because ultimately I think this life is about, you know, serving others. And so my role, you know, in that, I hope I'm a role model to others. Yeah, at some point in their life, you know, and I can inspire others, because to me, that's where the real reward comes from, not from what I accomplish, but what I can kind of inspire others to do as well.
Yeah. Well said, 100%. Yeah.
Thank you.
And then you also are a talent scout for USAT.
Yeah. Yeah. So USAT has initiated a high school program. And they have talent scouts volunteer to support building that high school program across the country. So it is helping others to start clubs, to bring in that talent, you know, bring it together and create that camaraderie, right? And that social aspect and get people out and active kind of thing. So I just started to get involved in that. It's a really great way to get younger, you know, individuals into the sport, and hopefully it becomes a lifestyle for them as well. So
yeah, great. Awesome. Absolutely awesome. Well, I think that's covered your journey. So all we've got left are the quick fire questions.
I get in, you know, 10 to 15 hours, given the distance, you know, I'm in. So it requires a lot of early mornings. Now I'll say that, because got to get it in the morning, because next comes work, and then next comes being a mom, and then sleep. And so, you got to eat within there, you know, during. So that's what my typical week is. It's just balancing all of those, you know, different pieces, as well as, you know, being in a relationship, which is important to me too. So it's finding the time, but it's making the time, you know, and different, every day is a different priority, you know? So.
Yeah. Cool. Cool. And what's your favorite bit of kit?
Oh, okay. I would say it's gotta be my bike.
That's the number one answer.
Perfect. Gotta be the bike.
Well, I think it's usually the bike, because it's the most we spend on a piece of equipment, and probably the most we use as well, I guess.
Yeah. It's just fun to, you know, I do have a mountain bike and I have a gravel bike, and it's just fun sometimes to be like, well, what am I going to do today? You know, it's not always getting on the road bike and drilling it. Sometimes it might be going to the trails and maybe doing a slower, you know, more power based workout. So I like the variety you can get with, you know, by choice of bike, for example.
Cool. And what resources do you use for your triathlon? And it could be videos, could be books that you would recommend to others to have a look at.
So definitely mentioned the 80-20 training. There's book, there's also online resources. So definitely support that.
Is it that one?
That's it. Matt Fitzgerald. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
By Matt Fitzgerald and David Warden.
Yeah.
Very good book.
Yes, that has always been by my side, and even the plans that are in there, so easily adoptable, and they actually are already in Training Peaks if you have that type of access. So, and I recently became a certified 80/20 coach because I believed in it so much. So that is definitely my go-to for sure. Otherwise, it's just general reading, to be honest, just, ad hoc, whatever's out there. And I feel a little bit lucky because as an epidemiologist, you learn how to sift through, all of the information, and what to really put effort into and what to be like, well, so I'm a very critical reader of, the literature and what's out there. But I think you can find a nugget of information in almost everything. So for me, it's trying to stay current, even going into the chats and seeing what people are talking about and adding to that and pulling away from that. So mostly reading, not a lot of video.
I mean, there's so much, like you said, there's so much information out there. It's and trying to keep up with it all is very, very difficult, isn't it? So, but yeah, that book definitely is a really good resource and a great read. And I think you've probably answered this one, your short and long term goals.
Short-term goal is to qualify for next year in the long distance aqua bike. And then long term, I really want to find more ways to give back to the sport. I can't keep this. I mean, I would love to. I know I'll probably still be doing them when I'm 80, but at the same time, I really want to find a way to give back, whether it be through the USAT Foundation, again, through the Talent Scout. Also, supporting my son who has now got the bug at 14 years old.
Excellent.
So just supporting the community at large, and making it more accessible, kind of breaking down some of the myths that I think that are out there about the sport. And so that's really more of the long term, which is starting now already, but I hope that, in the end I can be of service back to, the community that has brought me so much, in my personal life. So.
Fantastic. Well, good luck with it all. And thank you ever so much for taking your time out in your day, for coming on and sharing a wonderful story.
Well, thank
And
you.
yeah, it's a great place to land it. So thank you.
Thank you.
So that was Crystal. And what a story. And what a lovely person. And I'm so glad that you've got to hear it. And I hope when it goes out, all her family and friends are really proud of what she's achieved and how she's dealing with what she's gone through. So, thank you once again, Crystal. Much appreciated, and it was lovely to meet you. And that's about it for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. And if you have, please give us a review on Apple Podcast, leave us a rating, subscribe to the show, and it all helps to get our message out there. And we're slowly gaining momentum. But it's not about that. It's just about enjoying putting this together and meeting wonderful people like Crystal and hearing their fantastic stories and being able to send them out to you guys. So thank you once again for listening. And if you'd like to share your story like Crystal did, please get in touch. You can drop us a message on email at agegroupmultisportpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at amp_1967. We're on Facebook at ampgb. We're on Twitter at agegroupmultisportpodcast, although it's not called Twitter anymore. It's called X. And we have our own YouTube channel at ampgb. And I have started putting a few of the videos on, which are unedited of our chats with the guests that we've had on recently. So you can check those out. So once again, thank you for listening. And don't forget, stay safe, keep training, and love the process.